Morning. Hello. Is it okay? Okay. Good morning. Welcome to next lecture with Sergey Banin, Advanced Dynamic Analysis. See what he came up with. Should be chapter 8 and 9 in the book. Maybe a little bit from chapter 10. I don't know. But so we're trying to cover 2.5 to 3 chapters today. I hope everybody did all right on the assignment. I have, like I wrote on Blackboard, I've had a quick look, and it looks like it's my computer is. Then we get the loop back here. Okay, hold on. Anyway, I've had a quick look at the assignments, and I'll start looking at them closer now. But I think most people, if not all, that handed something in can stop worrying, since it's just pass-fail. First impression, I'll give you a better feedback later, but the first impression is that the basic dynamic and basic static analysis is something that most of you are comfortable with, but when it comes to IDA Pro and looking at the assembly code, that's when at least some people find it more difficult. Quite natural, but yeah. All right, Sergey, ready?
Yep.
Okay, there you go.
Right. I hope people can hear me. Should I try to put it on? I can try to. All right. Is it all right? Not that loud or? Okay. All right. So today we have a lecture on debugging in general, and debugging in the only debug. So let's start. And what is the debugging? So debugging is the process of finding and resolving the defects and problems that you can meet in the program, either during the development of the program or either during the reverse engineering. And why this is called debugging? Because this term was introduced in the 1940s, and basically it was an insect that was found in the old computer machines that were quite big and quite tough, so the insects could go inside and change some behavior of that machines. And the debugging, it can be performed either manually. So for example, you can set the output of the variables during the each step of the loop and see how they change during the execution, and then just find some problems and defects in computations. Or you can do it with a specialized tools. So for example, if you use Visual Studio as an IDE, then you just run it in the debug mode and you can set up watches and track how the values of variables are changed. So it's almost the same as the manual, but it's just more convenient and faster way. And also you can edit the values during each step of execution and so on. Also you can use something like only debug, about which we will talk today a bit later, and the difference between debugging in Visual Studio and only debug is that for debugging in Visual Studio you need to have a source code, and you go through the each step of the through the each line of the source code in the Visual Studio, and in only debug you only need an executable. And today we will talk mostly about using the only debug. And why do we talk about only debug and tools in general? Because when you debug from the, for example, Visual Studio, it is hard to go on the level below the level of the source code language. So if you want to see the content of the memory, if you want to see the content of the registers, then you have to perform some very, very special tricks in Visual Studio, but with Olli Debug it's much easier and faster. So let's take a look at some definitions. So debugger, it's a software or hardware, yes, it could be a hardware as well, that is used to examine the program during its execution. Another definition that we will need today is a disassembler. And what disassembler does, it provides an overview of the program, of the instructions that are contained in the program. So the debugger needs disassembler. So there's different approaches in the disassembler. Well, the one is linear sweep, and it just basically goes through each instruction found in the program and then displays it to a user. Another approach is a recursive traversal. So first it starts with a basic linear sweep, so it goes through each line and displays it to a user, but then if the branch or some function call is present in the code of the program, then it follows the jump or it goes to that call, and then it performs linear sweep as well. So it's just a bit more intelligent disassembly process. And I should notice that you don't need to mistake the disassemblers and decompilers, because disassemblers, they just show you the basic instructions and assembly code, while decompilers, they try to reconstruct the higher level language from the binary code. So they try to reconstruct how this program could have looked in the Java or in the C++ or in any other language. So there's two different types of debuggers. The one is source level debuggers, which I already mentioned, for example, Visual Studio, and another one is an assembly level, for example, Olli Debug. As you can see, it operates with the assembly instructions, and it allows to track the values inside the registers, to see the content of the stack, to edit the content of memory, and so on. So, yes. Further? Yeah? Yeah, from breathing? Yeah, I know. I hear it, yeah, but... Yeah, I hear it, but... Right. I hope so. It should be some sound. Yes, you can ask questions. Yes. No. One more. One more. So it will just display call. Yeah, so there was a question. If the linear sweep disassembler goes to the function call, so it will display the call and address of that function, but it won't probably, it won't go to that function and disassemble it first. It will just step on the next instruction and continue until this function is met. Because, for example, that function could have been defined earlier than the call, so it might have happened that that function is already disassembled, so we already have that code. Yes, so... All right, so what do we need to have a good debugger? As I mentioned, it is a powerful disassembler, so... it is very convenient to see which instructions are executed by a program, and to be able to track its execution flow to understand why this or that happened during the program execution. Another thing what is needed for the debugger is a capability to stop the program when you as the reverse engineer need it. So for this there exists software and hardware breakpoints, and the software breakpoints is a quite simple thing. So the instruction on which you want to the program to be paused is substituted by the INT3 instruction, so it's just zero, so it's just CC code in the hexadecimal, and when this instruction is met during the execution of the program, then the control is given back to the debugger. So then you as a reverse engineer can check whatever you wanted to check at that particular point, and afterwards when you press continue, then debugger just places back the original instruction and it will be executed as normally. Another thing is hardware breakpoints. So here they are, and they are the special CPU features. They are the the hardware breakpoints registers, and they are used mostly to pause execution when a certain memory address is accessed. It doesn't matter whether it is just data region or a code region, so it will work for both. The only thing you need to remember about the hardware breakpoints that the program can change the values in that hardware breakpoints registers. So sometimes you will see, for example, if you will work with OliDebug, that it will notify you that that program has changed the values in the debugging registers, and it means that you will probably not get the results you wanted. So what else you need to be able to have to be able to do in the debugger to make it a good debugger is to view the registers and to view the memory. So memory and registers is the places where the data is stored, and where you can see changes in the data that are processed by the CPU. So of course it is very useful to be able to change the values in the registers or in the memory or in the memory regions. So as you might probably know, that stack is also stored in the memory, so the good debuggers will allow you to see only a stack if you need it. So you will see which values are pushed to the stack, or when they are popped up from the stack, so you'll see how they disappear during the execution. As many executables is not only a single slow executables, they will probably launch many threads. They will probably use different modules like libraries and many different things. So in the good debugger, you'll probably want to see that modules that are loaded, and you'll probably need to see the list of the threads that are launched by that executable. And for example, in OliDebug, you'll be able to see the stack of each particular thread. You'll be able to see the register state for each particular thread, and so on. So when we go next, we need to mention that there is two different modes of debugging. It's a user and it's a kernel mode debugging. And so most of the software that we are working in the daily life works in the user mode. And in order to operate with hardware and to access it, they use special interfaces. And it's not that often when malware uses the kernel mode, but you just need to know that if you need a kernel debugging, then you have to you have probably run two different systems, one of which will be a target and another one will be a host. So when you will stop a target, you'll still be able to continue work. So for example, if you attach to a target with a WinDBG and then you just track the execution flow and then you press pause, then the whole system, so the whole operation system, is stopped and you're not able to do anything. And even though you are detached from the target system, the target system will not remain working until you either reset it, like pressing the button on the physical machine, or restarting it at the virtual machine by pressing restart on the options, or you need to attach to the target again and then release it from the pause. But in this lecture, our main focus is on the user mode debugging, and in particular in the OLDI debug, not Win debug. So more on the kernel debug you can read in the chapter 10, but if by the end of the lecture we will have time, I will give you some information on the kernel debugging as well. So there's different debugging techniques you can use. So the basic thing you need to do during the debugging is to run and stop a program when you need it. So the simplest way to debug a program is just to go line by line over the assembly code of that program and see what happens. So usually it is called the single stepping, and by doing this you can track how values in registers are changed, how values in memory are changed, what is placed and what is taken from the stack, and so on. The problem with a single stepping is that if the program will call a function, for example, external function from one of the Windows libraries, and then that function will call another function, and you will spend a lot of time going through all these lists of functions and going back from them, waiting for the return. So then you can use a step over. So step over works pretty simple. You still go through each instruction, but when the function call is met, it does not show you what happens inside the function. It just waits until the return from the function and continue an execution of the program after the function call. The only problem with the step over is that some functions might not call return, and the debugger will not remain control and you will never know what has happened there. So for that cases you have a step into functionality. So you will met the function call, then you step into, and the debugger calls the function and regains control on the first instruction of the function. So then you can see what happens inside the function and why for some reason that function behaved in the way it behaved during the step over. So sometimes you need to understand what happened inside. So as I already mentioned, there's different ways of starting and stopping the program when you need it, because if the program is quite big, you'll probably be tired of pressing the step into or step over button through all the program, and you'll probably need to stop an execution at some particular point where you found it will be suitable to stop. So the first thing, as I already mentioned, is software breakpoints, and again, the instruction in the interest are substituted with the hexadecimal CC code. So it's here, and when that instruction is executed, so the operational system passes a control to a debugger. Another thing is a hardware breakpoint, and They're just a special hardware feature that allows you to track when the certain memory region is read or written, so when it is accessed. Another type of breakpoints is a conditional breakpoints, and they're quite interesting because you don't only need to you don't need to find a particular point of the program where to place, for example, software breakpoint or hardware breakpoint. So for conditional breakpoint, you just set, for example, the debugger should stop if the instruction pointer or the base register is equal to some particular value, or when some particular type of instruction will be executed, then the debugger should give you control back. So how it is implemented? So debugger runs through all the program, and after each instruction, creates a software. It creates a software. Yeah, I should point it with a mouse. It creates a software breakpoint and checks if condition is met. And if condition is not met, then it continues execution without asking user. But if the condition is met, like for example, the instruction pointer points to some particular instruction, or the base register contains some specific value that you wanted to see, or not exact value but is greater or less than something. So there's different things you can put in the conditional breakpoint. So if the condition is met, then the program is stopped, and you as a reverse engineer can track the values and can see what you wanted to see there, depending on the situation. So another thing that you need to be aware during the debugging is exceptions, because many programs will raise exceptions, and you need to know how to handle these exceptions, because it is good when the developers handled an exception inside the program, and the exception is raised, it is catched, and then the program can continue execution. So in this case, it is called the first first chance exception, and the thing is that first chance exceptions are not really crucial for the execution flow, and in most cases you won't be interested in them, because first chance exceptions is just some small bugs in the program that are already handled by the developers. Another more important thing is second chance exceptions, and they are not handled by the developers of the program. Like for example, for some reason division by zero can be executed at the next instruction. So if this exception will not be handled, or if the values in the memory won't be changed, then the program will crash, because you can divide by zero. If the exception is not handled, then the program won't run after that instruction. So if you will met that condition, for example, in only debug, then it will notify you that there is a division by zero, integer division by zero, for example, met, and the program is stopped, and you have to decide what to do next. You either stop a program and see from where that zero was appeared in the memory or in the register, or you just change that value of zero to something more suitable, like 1, 2, or something else, and continue execution of the program. So for this example, I will show you by the end of the lecture in the only debug how to deal with that. By the way, the question is, did you guys download that zip folder from the Blackboard with some executables? No? All right, so, okay, so, yeah, all right, so, yeah, I should mention it now probably, that On the Blackboard, there's a small zip folder with the programs that I made myself, just to show you some examples from what I have mentioned during the lecture. So you can try to download it now or later, but I'll just show how to work, for example, with exceptions or how to attach to a running process and so on. So what else you can do with the debuggers is you can modify an executional flow, so you can change manually the instruction pointers, you can change the values of the flags so the jumps will go to another places, and so on. So with some debuggers, especially with Oli debug, it is possible to change the assembly code of the program, and you can delete some instructions, you can change them, you can change the jumps, you can change addresses of the jumps, their conditions, or you can just fill the place of some particular comment with empty comments, with nops, and if you just need to change its behavior in some particular point. So this is usually made to meet some particular conditions faster. So if, for example, you met, I don't know, the part of the dead code that is for some reason is not reachable during the normal execution, but then you want it to be executed, and then you can change the instruction pointer, so it will point to the first instruction of the dead code, and then the program continue execution from that particular instruction. Yes? Yeah, all right, as it was mentioned, right now you can also use this capability to change the code of the program in order to avoid anti-reversing techniques. So if you know that this particular piece of code will check for the for the presence of the debugger, or will try to alter the values of the debug registers in CPU, then you can try to avoid its execution. So you will just jump over that particular piece of code, or you will just fill it all with the NOP instructions and go further without any problems. So so far we talked a bit about the debuggers in general, so what you usually able to do there, and how you can do some certain things. So, and now we'll talk about the Oli debug, and I will mostly use examples from Oli debug version 2.01. So there's different versions, which Oli debug version is better, first or second. Well, for me it looks that second version is a bit more robust, because you can choose where to stop the execution, the program execution after you start the process in the debugger, in more ways than in the Oli debug version first. But I will mention it on the next slides in more detail. So what is Oli debug? Is a 32-bit assembler, assembly level analyzing debugger for Microsoft Windows and for Microsoft Windows executables, and so you won't be able to run it on Linux and to reverse some Linux or macOS executable files. So Oli debug is capable of everything we mentioned before. You can trace registers, you can track and change the values in the memory. It will show you the API calls, it will show you the procedures, and you'll be able to find the strings and alter the strings, and so on. Also, the immunity debugger was made out of Oli debug, so they usually share many of the functionalities. So when we go next, what you should do in order to use the only debug. Always run it with administrative privileges. In another case, every time it will met a call of some Windows libraries, it will raise access violation policies, exceptions, and so on. So if you don't want to catch these exceptions every second, then please run it with administrative privileges. So when you let me probably know. Okay, so to open a file, you just go file, you just press open, and then you find some program and you basically open that. So it does some calculations, and then it shows you information you need. So now I will explain it in a bit more detailed manner. So the files, as I mentioned, they are launched first. They are not stopped in the very beginning, but they are stopped on some predefined points. So, for example, if we will go to the options, and if we'll go to the start options, there is a different capabilities where to stop a program execution, or you don't want it to stop, so you'll just see what happens if you check the option no pause. So as I mentioned, in the only debug version 2, there is more options where to stop the execution, and the particular interest is the TLS callback. I won't go into the detail why it is important and how it can affect the execution, but I will just mention that in the first version you don't have this, and if the malware developers were smart enough, they can put already some execution at the point around this at the TLS callbacks. So then if the execution was stopped already here, then you won't catch any malicious activity. So everything was done before the debugger catched the execution. So this is very important, I think, to have this. Like, if you want more information of how malware creators can use these drawbacks of some debuggers, then you can try to find this information yourself, but we won't focus on that. So what also here you're able to choose the options where to pause an execution when you attach to a running process, because you don't need always to run the process itself. You can just attach to it from the list of the processes, and also you can choose where to stop execution in the DLLs. So OliDebug also capable of debugging the dynamic linked libraries, and we will talk about that very soon. So as I told, you can change the first pause point at the options debugging in the only debug, and some software takes command line arguments, like some utilities from the command line. So then you during the launch you go to open, and here you will just mention some arguments. So for example, this program doesn't take any arguments, but you can type there, I don't know, like -C9, whatever they take as the arguments. Also here you can find a current dir field. So why it is needed is because, for example, I'll just show you how it works. And yes, so for example, here is a very simple program, if we will open it right here, without mentioning any directory in the current dir, yes. And if we run, then there is a window. Where is the window? Oh yeah, it raised me some exception. I hope everything will work fine. Yeah, so what it does, it just prints the current directory. So it asks the system for the current directory where the executable is launched. But if you will mention here another directory, I don't know, if you will mention C, something like Windows, if it will work for us, then we keep on running. We're okay. Yeah, again, some exceptions for my system. Yeah, but it's just first chance exceptions, and they are not crucial. So yeah, how to get you that window back. So now, as you can see, even though the executable was not moved to the directory Windows on the drive C, it thinks it works in that directory. So some executables will need to be launched from some particular places, and then because they rely on not the absolute paths to files, but on the relative paths, so they will search for some files and the libraries in the directory where they placed. So this is just an option that you need to be aware of, and you can use it. Yes. All right. Yeah. So I mentioned that you can choose the directory where the executable is launched. So if you need it, you just use it. So when the program is launched and stopped in the debugger, there is in the only debugger, because we're talking about it right now, it contains four main windows. So this is disassembler window, this is registers window, this is memory window, and this is a stack window. So in these windows you see a main information about what is happening now in the program, and in all of them you are able to change values and to alter some information that you see. So for example, if you want to change the value in the EAX register, the program previous time it was just already stopped because it finished its execution, so we cannot change the values and the registers for that particular program when it is already executed. But right now, so we are able to modify the values in the registers. So again, you either press right mouse button and go to modify, or press enter, as you can see. And here you can modify it as a hexadecimal, as assigned integers, or unsigned, or characters. So if you know the codes and so on. Also, you can change, of course, the source code. As we mentioned, it is a very useful thing. So here you either press on some particular instruction, and then you press space, for example, and you see this instruction, and you can modify it. So you will probably want to change the address of jump, or to have not a jump, but some other instruction. You can directly start typing. So if I want to change this jump to, I don't know, to compare EAX and EBX registers, so I will just start typing CMP, and you see it appears. And if I continue, No. If I continue, I can... Yes, I don't see it from here. Yes. And then I press assemble and it is placed instead of that instruction. So when you want it to be placed in the executable, so it will change the executable forever if you don't have a backup. So you basically... Wait, why can't... All right. Let's go to it on the next example. So here, what you need to know is that if you go to view and will choose patches, you will see what you have changed, like original comment, and to which comment you have changed it. So then from here, you'll just you're just able to restore the original code. So when you restore it, then here the old comment is already appeared. So again, you can edit it, or if you want these edits to be saved to an executable, then you will use edit submenu, and you will just press it, copy to executable. But we won't do that right now because I need this program as an example. So, what time is it now? Yes, I guess. All right. Yes, I showed. Yeah, 2 more minutes or 1 more minute. So, so you can edit as I showed. You can edit the source code. You can edit the registers. You can go, for example, to the memory layout and change its values as well. So right now it looks like a bunch of some text symbols, string symbols, but if you want to change its appearance, you go to the right click menu and you change, for example, that let it look like a lone unsigned integers, and then you are able to see it as a lone unsigned integers, and then you are able to edit it. So if you want to perform binary, if you want to binary edit, then you just type in the hex value. So if you want to place here like F, it will change the appearance somehow, and you see the value has changed. Also, if you, for example, need to change a memory region, you select all the memory region and you edit it again, like as a binary edit, and then you type in all the values you need. The thing is that with an integers, you can not only edit it as a binary, you can edit it as a double word, and then you're able to type in exactly the signed value or unsigned value in the decimal way, not in the hexadecimal. So if I want to place here, I don't know, 3333, then it will calculate the correct value in the hexadecimal and it will place it here. But now we see it as decimals because it's an integer way. The thing, you can change the values in the stack. Again, you go to edit and you edit it as a double word either binary. Also, you can push and pop different values into the stack. So you will just press some value. Let's say it will be all Fs, and okay. And here it is on the top of the stack. It is pushed our value. We just placed it here. Also, I'll show you it later, but from the source code, after a break I'll show you. From the source code, you are able to track to which place in the memory such comments when it's pointers and not the direct values or registers to which points in the memory these comments are referenced. So you'll just use right click and you'll just follow and dump, and you'll select memory address, and it will show you where this value is placed in memory. Alright, so let's make a break right now. And how many time do we have for a break? 15 minutes. Alright, so it's 15 minutes break for those who online. So in 9:20 we are back online.
One, two. Yeah, let's start. I got a question in the break that I want to repeat for everybody, and it concerns how does this topic relate to what we have covered before. If you look in your textbook, it's divided into different parts. So we covered in the beginning part one, basic analysis. In basic analysis, we divide it into dynamic and static. So static is what you can learn without running the code. And then we had a basic dynamic where we started a bunch of tools that monitor the system. We ran the malicious code and we figure out what changes did it do to the system. You all use this as assignment one. And my first impression glancing at the assignment is that most of you at least found those two parts pretty easy. Then there's a part two of the book, which is advanced static analysis, which is where we dug into assembly code. We're trying to find constructs in assembly code, recognizing what the assembly code is doing. For that, we use the tool IDAPRO. And that's the part that my first impression is that some of you might struggle with in assignment one. Difficult but it's natural. It's a really difficult part to master. It needs a lot of practice. Now, what Sergey is covering is part three of the book, Advanced Dynamic, and that is running the code again, but is running the code in a controlled manner. And I mentioned to one, you can use this for several things, like Sergey has already mentioned. But I want to mention one more thing that is covered in the book in chapter 18. I have a plan to cover it if we have time. We'll see. But it's packers and unpacking. And just to mention it, in case we're not going to get that far, running. If you want to unpack a packed code, you can let the code do it for you, because they have to do it in order to work. But if you do it in a controlled environment like Olli Debug, you can try to stop the execution at the exact point where the code is unpacked, but before it's executed. And then you can try to dump the memory, and then you have an unpacked version of the malware. And that is what one of the powerful techniques that is discussed in Chapter 18, and that Olli Debug or IDAPRO, at least in a commercial version, will provide you with. So just trying to set this a little bit in context. And I also just want to mention that when Sergey is done now, next week I will continue with part four, which is malware functionality, just to look more into what malware is doing. Okay, that was it.
Right. I hope people can hear me. Right now? Right there? Is it fine? Okay. So, yeah. I have showed you some basic things in the Olli Debug interface. Just a second. What I'll also need to mention probably is that when it has opened some particular file, let's take any example, and let's wait, and in the code section or in the stack section or in the memory section, you have several options for addressing. So right now it's an absolute addresses in the memory, for example in the memory in the memory window, but as you can see, often there is a base register and an offset. So if you want easily find an offset of some particular value in relation to another value, then you just double click on the address column, and then you have a relative addressing. So far, you see that. Okay, let's switch to the hexadecimal mode, so it's more straightforward. So far, we have this line, and here is our zero, and here it's our 10 in hexadecimal, so it's not 10, it's 10 in hexadecimal, so it's plus 10, and here is plus 120. But if, for example, your base is pointing not to particular this cell, memory cell, but to this one, then you select this cell and you double click, and then you can see that this line starts from the offset minus 4 in related to this memory cell, and this one, this line starts from minus 14, and so on. So this is just a very useful thing when the offsets are like minus 19, minus 120. It could be different. Well, it's here. The same for stack. As you can see, it changes. And the same for the disassembly window. So again, it just shows you how far from a chosen line of a code another line of a code lay. So you can see that it's this one is plus 4 bytes, and this one is just 1 byte more, because this is a very simple comment. It's as you see, it's a software breakpoint comment. All right, so where's the pointer? Okay. Yeah, so I have probably shown you everything that is mentioned on this slide. You can read it once more when you need it. So more useful things in the OliDebug interface. OliDebug has not only that CPU view that I have just showed you, but there's many others, and if you press F6, you switch between different of them. It's exception handlers, and this is different windows that you can see. It's a calls that are made during the execution. This is a rent trace. Now it's an empty, because we were not running a trace option, but I'll show you probably it on the next slides. So it will show you the source files. So, but just by pressing F6, you can in a very fast manner switch between the windows. So what else you need to be aware in the OliDebug interface is that it has a memory map, and sometimes you will need to go and look at the memory map itself, because in some cases OliDebug will stop in some strange places, and if you need to examine the code section, the code section, you go to the memory map, and here you see, so this is the name of our program, and it has different sections. So it's a PE header, it's a text where where the code, the binary code, is placed. This is data and the relocations. So if you want to go to that particular place in the memory, you double click on it. No, wait a second. Yes. And here's a dump window of that particular memory section is displayed. So the same for resources, for example. Yeah, so you'll see that data values that are stored there. So if you'll go to the CPU, the main view, then you'll probably see the same memory region. So you see the address here and the address here, they are the same, because this is how memory map works. And the next thing to mention is threads. Yeah, because an executable can create many different threads, and if you want to see which threads are created, then you go to that view. Now it's a simple application. I wrote it myself. It's just one thread, But if there is a different thread, then you click on it and you'll see a CPU window for that particular thread. So not for the main thread, but for the particular thread you selected. And you'll see the state of registers and the state of the stack for that particular thread. Also, there is a quite interesting thing called watches. So the watches found in view and watches. So now it's empty, but you can add watch, and there is a way to type in here different expressions. So I won't go into detail about that right now, but let me just show you that when you download all the debug, at least when I downloaded it, it contained the help file, help PDF, and if you open it, wait a second. Yeah, if you yes, where it is. So if you open it here, you have different usage examples, and in particular, you will. Okay. So in particular, you will find here. An expressions and watches. So here it is, and there is an explanation of syntax and of capabilities that you can use in the watches. So there's different things you can mention. So in the watches, so you can track if, for example, the value in some particular register can be divided by 4 or by 8 or by 5, or it's greater or equal or less than something, and so on. So just be aware that in that help file that goes together with all the debug, the syntax and all the features are mentioned. In the all the debug, if you go to the view and you select software breakpoints or hardware breakpoints, all the others. So you'll just see a list of breakpoints that you placed, and you can easily switch through them. So you don't need to find them through all the source code. You just see them in the list altogether. So execution of the program. Here you can find different ways of execution the program. So you can either run the program and it will execute until the exception or until it's finished, or you can, as I mentioned in the beginning when I was talking about debuggers in general, you can step into, which is equal to single step in. You can step over the function calls and just continue execution. You can also execute until return, and this is a very useful thing because sometimes when you are inside the functions, you'll just want to execute it by the end but not go out of the function, so it will stop by the return, by the return instruction. Execute till user code, it is by the documentation, it is supposed to execute all the function calls and function calls inside the function calls until the user code or the code of the main program is met. But from my experience, it does not always work as it is supposed to work. So just be aware that sometimes it will recognize some external functions as a user code. Especially it happens when you try to debug .NET applications in the only debug. So if you've written something in C# and you press execute till user code, it will stop in some, I don't know, NTDLL library. So this is probably the reason to use other tools for .NET debugging, but we won't talk about them right now. So when you press close, it will just stop the process and empty all the windows in the only debug, and the restart just restarts the process, and it doesn't matter if the process was launched from the only debug or if you just attached to it. It will in any case at least try to restart that process. So what else you have to know is that there is a trace option. So if you'll press trace into, now it will start. Yeah, I'll just wait because I have deleted all the files that stores intermediate information for only debug. So yeah, well, now it's some kind of access violation, and it really doesn't matter for us right now. But if we go after we launched the trace, and if we go to the run trace, you can see all the comments that were executed, and you can see which memory addresses were referenced and which registers were modified. And if you'll go to options, and if you'll go to the settings of the run trace, you can select what it has to store and how much it will store. So it will be 4 megabytes or 256 megabytes. So whether it will remember the comments, whether it will remember the memory, and several other things. So yeah, but sometimes you will want to see what has happened. So on the zero, this is last comment, and this is all the previous comments. All right. So I have briefly mentioned how you can run the execution flow of the program. So there's just some shortcuts on the keyboard. So you will learn them very fast. It's just like usually it's F7 or F8 or F9 if you want to run the program and wait until something interesting will happen. So on the next slide, yeah, so here we already talked about the breakpoints. Here we already talked about the breakpoints, and only debug has software, hardware, and conditional breakpoints and memory breakpoints. So in order to set up the breakpoint, let's show you. In order to set up the breakpoint, yeah, and let's restart. We don't need all the information right now. So you select some particular line of the assembly code, and then you set a breakpoint. So if you choose toggle breakpoint or press F2, this is just a software breakpoint. So you don't see the change that when the debugger substitutes this line of code with the hexadecimal CC code, but it will does it itself. So it will return the control when that instruction is about to be executed. Also here you have conditional breakpoints. So you will set the condition. Again, the syntax of the conditions are in the help file. So you just read it there, and you'll find it pretty easy to use. So it's nothing really difficult. Also the memory breakpoints, but memory breakpoints are usually set from the memory window. So you go and you set the memory breakpoint, and you select whether it is read access or write access, or if it's a dot text memory section, then you'll probably want execution breakpoint on execution, and so on. So there's a different breakpoint options in the OLLI debug. You just need to know that they're available for you, and you can easily use them. Also, what is good to mention is that you have quite powerful search search engine here in the Olli debug. There are different things you can find here, and most often you will want to find some strings, for example. Of course, you can type in what you want to search for, but if you go to the strings and you see different strings that are mentioned in that executable, and if you are interested in something, for example, this one doesn't matter, but I'll just show you that you can follow this in disassembler and you will see where this particular string is mentioned, or where this particular string will be used or transferred. So the same string can be mentioned in that strings list in several positions, because once it is just placed somewhere as a data, and next time it will be used as a parameter and so on. So another thing is procedures. So if you go to search for and look for the all found procedures right here, so then it will show you which procedures are found and used in that in that executable. Alright, and it will show, so local and global, it's a parameters. So this is especially interesting when you're debugging the dynamic link libraries, because it will show you which procedures are placed in the dynamic link library, because when you debug and do reverse engineering with a dynamic link library, it won't execute by itself, so you will need to invoke the function call and you will need to set up all the parameters yourself. So let's go to the next slide. As I already told you, the dynamic link libraries can also be debugged with Olli debug. The only thing that you need to know, that dynamic link libraries cannot be launched as the regular executables, but Olli debug has a capability to run it. So it has a small tool which is called load DLL. It is mentioned here, and it kind of launches the DLL, and then so if you go and launch, for example, User32 DLL, it's a standard dynamic link library in the Windows. So now what you can do is to go to the call DLL export and see the list. On my window, and see the list of all the functions that are found in the dynamic link library. So if you select any of those, Olli debug will try to detect how many arguments it has. It will show you their names on the left. And what you are able to do is that, for example, if you want to set a name for something specific, then you choose to which memory dump it refers, like, for example, memory dump 2, so it's first, second, third, and so on. So you just edit this content of that memory dump, and then you will probably be able to use this data as a parameter for the argument with name like here. But what I need to mention, that in some cases Olli debug won't find all the procedures that are placed in the dynamic link library, or it will detect the arguments in the wrong way. So when preparing for that lecture, I was trying to make a very simple dynamic link library with just one procedure. So I have written it in C++, and I thought I was wrong. Then I rewritten it by the manual from Microsoft, and even though I did it like all the things I did by the manual, instead of one argument that function took, it found two arguments. They were the same arguments, but there were two of them. And if the library was compiled in the debug mode, so you know, in the Visual Studio, you can select debug and release mode. And when it was in the debug mode, only debug was not able to find any procedure, even though the library was okay itself. So it was easy to call it from another executable, but only debug did not found it. So just for you to know, so if only debug does not find any procedures in the dynamic link library, it doesn't matter that there is no procedures. They could be there, but you cannot see them from only debug. And yeah. So, yes, dynamic link libraries. Yes, I told you that you can use call DLL export, and it will show you detected functions, if it detected some functions. And yeah, of course, the registers is sometimes some functions will need to take arguments or some values from registers. So before call, you will need to change value here, either, I don't know, either manually or again by referencing to the one of the memory dumps. And when you will call, when you will press call export, the instruction pointer will point to the first instruction of that function. So then you press run, it executes, and when it finished the execution, this window will pop up again, and you will see what has changed in the registers, because you see it's a before call and after call columns. And in this window, I will show you in the examples in the end, if the function returns some value. You know, functions can sometimes return some numeric value or string value or some codes. You will see the results of that function here in that small window. So this is pretty much it about the only debug I wanted to mention, because if you need something really, really specific, then you either try to find it in the book or you go online. But to make the laboratory works, this is pretty much enough for you to make them. So what I want to show you right now, I mean, if you guys want to follow me, you can download a zip folder from the Blackboard. If you don't want, you can just look at that and then try to repeat it or not repeat it at home. So it's just some simple examples. So right now I will show you some simple things. So let's go to the here is some wait. Yes. Here's a simple application, and okay, everything is launched on my screen. Yes. And if we launch it right here, you will see that this is some exception caused. You see, it is it's printed in the A equals 5, B equals 0, and then we see an exception, attempt to divide by 0. So there's might be a division by 0 exception. So if we go, yeah, let me just copy that path. So if we go to the only debug and we try to open this, application here. Yes. So now it is stopped at some point that we're choosing in the options, and then we, so yeah, and here is, here's already a window for that application appeared. But then we press run, it executes, it does something, it performs all the function it performs all the function calls. Oh yeah, well, it's again some memory things with them. But it does matter. Okay, we want to track that division by zero exception. So yeah. Yeah, you also need to know that only debug stores information about some launches and other things in the UDD files in its directory where it is placed. So some information may remain until the next launch of that executable in the only debug. So sometimes it is useful, sometimes it will you will not need this information, so you just delete it. So right now we found the integer division by zero, and here we see that an instruction that that about to call that exception is right here. So it's idiff devort and pointer to some memory region. So what idiff does, it takes a value from the EAX register and it divides it by the by another value, doesn't matter from memory or from another register, and then it places the results in EAX again. So right now we know that there is a division by zero, and we have a pointer to some memory region. So you can try to find it by looking for EBP and then go into that address in the memory dump and calculating this offset. But the easiest way is to right click on it and follow in dump and then memory address. And yeah, it shows us something, but as we work with the integer division by zero, then we'll probably select long, for example, signed. So long, it's just regular integers, and short, it's 16-bit integers. This is how it is called in the OLLI debug. So we select long signed, and here we have, and this is a zero. So if we see EBP points to that particular address, and if we follow it in the dump, it's somewhere here. But if we find this offset, like minus 14, so it's here. It's here because this is -10 and this is -14. But again, the easiest way to find that value is this one. So we know that this is division by zero, and we're about to change this. So we go to the edit, right click, edit, and then edit double word, and let's divide it by 2. So since it's integer division, the result will be 2, not 2.5, but just 2. But again, we will avoid this division by 0. So we change that value, it's 2, everything is fine, and we continue execution. So now I'll just press F7. So right now it was 2, it was 5 here, 5 divided by 2 in the integer values will get only 2. So everything is fine, no exceptions, and now we can continue the running. So process terminated, exit code 0, it means that everything is alright. And on the window for the application, the console window, you will see that A equals 5, even though the B equals 0, because output was performed before the IDIF instruction that caused division by 0 exception. C equals 2, so this is our result. So this is how you handle exceptions, this is how you edit the memory and find the values that causes that exceptions. This was first quite simple example. This is example about the current directory. I have already showed it to you. You might want to run it once again or not, so this is just to show how the options in the file open dialog of the OLLI debug works. Another example is attaching to a running process, and to do so we'll go to my counter application and let's launch it. And okay, where is the all right, so what it does, it just counts the number of cycles that were executed with some delay. So when we want to attach to a running process with the OLLI debug, we go to a file, we select attach, and we're trying to find our program. So here it is. So it's CPP counter, we press attach. Now it is attached to the launched executable, and so far you see it continues execution, because in the options on the start point there is no pause when attaching to applications. So if I will set it to the system breakpoint, for example, or doesn't matter, application code, for example. So if we launch it again, and if we launch it again and try to attach, so we see it runs. Yeah, I'll show you that. Yeah, it's now executed again. It counts the cycles, and then you go and you again attach to the CPP counter, to the new one, not the one that is debugged. Yeah, so right now the executional flow is stopped. So right now you can see that it is stopped not exactly in the code of an in the code of the executable itself. It's somewhere in the NTDLL. So if we want to see what happens in the main module, in the CPP counter, you right click in the disassembly window and you go to select module and you select CPP counter. So and you can see here the disassembly view of that main module. And now if we will execute, for example, like that one, so what we see that, so we started execution and it works again. But what I wanted to show you here is, let me just find it. I just wanted to show you. All right. Do we have time? Okay, we're almost run out of time. Okay, so I'll probably show you to those who are not who are in the classroom. I'll just show how to change a number of cycles that are executed and to change the delay that is taken between the cycles. But also I will show you how to deal, yes, again with the DLLs. So again, we go to the OLLI debug, we select the user 32 DLL. It is placed in the C Windows System 32 folder, and it has many different functions that can be used by the applications, by the user applications. And our particular interest are now in the message window, very simple message window. It is called message box, where it is message box W. So here we have four arguments, and this H owner is just the main window, the main owner of the window that will be invoked by that function. So here we will choose this parameter, so just believe me that it works. Another thing is text. So here you see there's some values here because I already launched it, but just to show you, let's place here some some random text. Yeah, so it will be random here, and you see the text points to the dump 2, and the caption it will be the name of the small message window. Let's point it to the dump 3 and let's edit it and place there something like our caption. Yes, let it be like that. And the type, there is different ways to set the type. On the slide you can see that there is okay no yes sorry s- just need to switch between the windows. So on the slide you can see that there's different options you can put there, and by that link you can find many different parameters and how you will be able to set them. But as an example, I will show you how to put the simplest of them. So let's say we will type here something like MB yes, no, cancel. It means that our window will have three buttons on the bottom, and now we set an icon, so it's icon warning here. So everything is ready right now. I have chosen the hide and call option, so this window will disappear when the call is invoked. So now I press call export, so all these parameters go to the function and function is called. Yes, and again, right, yes, okay, it's here. And let's try to run it again. Let's try to run it again. Okay, and come on, I need to. All right, sorry for that. I need to restart probably the OLLI debug. Sometimes it happens, and even though you see this small green. Okay, yeah, it worked. Sorry, it worked on the other window, so I didn't see it. So yeah, so as you remember, we placed the random text in the message box, and we placed our caption text in the caption field, and we also placed the warning icon parameter and the three buttons parameters in the last argument of function. So if now we'll press cancel, you see that there's something returned by a function. So right now EAX equals ID cancel, and there's just some codes that are predefined in that libraries, and only debug are aware of them. So in other cases, if it's not a commonly known dynamic link library, here you will get just some numbers or just some text that is not interpreted by the only debug. And also you can see that EAX equals 0002, and only debug interprets it as a ID cancel because we pressed the cancel button. And also ECX register was changed to that particular value. So you might want to know what happened to the registers after the execution of the function call. Yes. No, so these values, okay, so it was a question whether these values are passed to the registers. No, they are not passed to the registers, they are stored in the memory regions. So these addresses are the addresses of the memory. So if we will follow this dump in the D word here, okay, here in the memory window, and if we will switch to text, no, okay, come on, where it is you. Okay, it's. I have pressed on the wrong way. So, let's go to the expression, and there we had 00402 5 C0, and here it is. And you see, it's random. Yeah, it's inserted with some A's, but it's just a representation of empty memory cells, because here we need only one byte for that values. So that memory dump that was questioned about is a real address of the memory. So you can see it's the same here and here. But these values, I was able to set them as text, not as a number, because only debug knows that a particular constant, because it's a common Windows library. But if you'll go through the slides at home and you will press on the link, you will see that the same argument could be set as just as a hexadecimal value, and it will do the same. So the library will recognize this hexadecimal value and will create the same window with the same three buttons and the same warning icon. Yes. Okay. Should I mention it to the people online? All right. It's just three slides, so five, 10 minutes maybe. Well, I didn't get to show one thing, but it's not really important, so people can try to do it. Alright. Right, so I'm repeating what we just discussed in the classroom for those who are online. Now we will have a 15 minutes break, and afterwards I will have three more slides about kernel debugging. It's not the main topic of our today's lecture, and we're not going to focus on the chapter 10 in the book, but I find it useful for people to know how to set up the kernel debugging and how to use it. So I will just show how to start it, at least. Yeah, so we are finished for today with the main lecture, but in 15 minutes I will have three more slides to show you. So if there's no more questions, then all right, so and we continue at 10:25. Yes, thank you.